Hello, this is Republican strategist Ted DeLisi. Welcome to this week's TribCast. It's early voting time here in Texas, and in Fort Bend County, on the first day of early voting in the Republican primary, 1,483 people voted, actually a 57% increase over 2008. We don't yet know if we'll see a similar increase in listeners for this week's edition of The Media Interviewing the Media. Enjoy.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the third week of May. Joining me is editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Welcome back.
To me?
Yeah.
Yes, I've been out of the country for 2 weeks.
I appreciate your having the guest intro be my third favorite DeLisi. Not counting his children.
Yeah, his children weren't available.
He may be the sixth favorite. When you get all his kids.
The DeLisi kids commanded too high a price. We couldn't afford to bring them.
Is that the first time we've had now a husband and wife each do the intro over time?
Yes.
Until we get Carville, I guess, right?
Yeah,
we've had Madeline. We have to actually shoot for Carville, right?
Yeah.
Where's Donna Howard's husband? You were not here for the great Donna Howard intro last week.
Yeah, but I did.
You orchestrated it.
Yeah. Right. I wasn't just lounging not doing any work.
Now we have to stop talking about Ted because his head will grow.
Yeah, you don't want him to topple over.
I do not want him. Because it'll be in our lobby is the problem.
But we might talk about him again. You'll
step
have to
over
listen
him.
To the end to find out.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway,
ooh, okay.
That's the voice of executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Yes, it was.
All right, confirmed.
No, this is the point
Everything
at which
you hear on this podcast is true.
No. Your script, you're supposed to go line. Your script
howdy.
Says,
okay,
howdy. You're supposed to do that mini pearl crap
howdy.
That you do every
howdy.
Week. Come
yeah,
on.
I've got the price tag hanging off of my what's left of my hair. And everyone
and your dress looks
that
very floral.
Thank
and,
you so
you
much.
Know,
and now for the one time we hear Ben's voice in the next half hour. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. KUT and the Texas Tribune's own Ben Philpott.
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, hello.
Nice.
I'm not used to sitting over here. I like the power of being in Reeve's seat for the last 2 weeks.
How's your building, Ben?
The building is just fine, although if anyone here wants to put their name up on a wall, I'm sure we'll take your money.
Shut up, Ben.
KUT has a new building that we are sure will be great.
I just got to say, that thing went up astonishingly fast.
It did.
I mean, it was like it was not there, and then you drive down Guadalupe.
It's the Belo Center. Is it called the Belo Center for Media?
The Belo Center for New Media is the academic portion of the building.
You think maybe they could spend some money on their own properties?
Yeah. And they gave $15 million to get the naming rights.
The look on Ross's face. The look on Ross's face says you're off Christie Hoppy's Christmas party.
Right. Yeah. Right. We don't need to focus too much on Ben's new building. I think we should move on.
You should just, I can't wait till everyone comes and sees my new cubicle.
The Philpott edifice. All right.
Yeah, made out of crystal.
That's right.
Chairs made out of gold.
Diamond cubicle. Well, I was wondering if you guys could fill me in on the Senate race.
Nothing is happening.
Nothing.
Well, you were out of the
growth.
You were out of the country. Isn't that where most of the money for the Senate race is coming from?
You've been away gambling at some Ritz-Carlton casino in the Middle East or whatever you've been doing for the last couple of weeks under the guise of working for us. Let me tell you what the frame is.
There's no gambling there.
Is that what it is?
Don't offend them.
The frame. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Now I'm on the watch list or something.
Sacha Baron
the
Cohen.
The frame. You know what? That I have to say that movie looks funny.
I want to go to it.
It looks really funny. Yeah. The frame around the Senate race conversation, Reeve, at the moment is Ted Cruz, Deb Fischer. I know both Craig James and Tom Leppard have attempted to claim the mantle of Deb Fischer, but if you lay the facts out end to end of the Nebraska Senate race and you look ahead to the Texas Senate race, the question really is Ted Cruz, Deb Fischer? Because of the three, the one who really seems to have that Deb Fischer
thing going
potentially.
Can you explain who Deb Fischer is? She's not Bobby's mom.
Searching for Deb Fischer would be a good movie to see also. No. Deb Fischer was the winning candidate in the Republican primary for Senate in Nebraska, who defeated not only the Club for Growth-supported candidate, whose name I believe was Sternberg, but then John Bruning, who's the Attorney General of Nebraska, who was the overwhelming establishment favorite and was said to be the one who would walk away with this. And in that respect, he's not Dick Lugar, in that Lugar was an incumbent who had been in that job for a long time. And Bruning was, it's an open seat, and Bruning was thought to be the likely winner of that primary. But this Deb Fischer came up from nowhere in the last couple of days. I don't even think it was a matter of weeks. I think it was days.
Well, sort of the read on this was that...
And overtook both Bruning and Sturmer.
The two front runners were hacking each other to pieces. And
so she ducked and they shot at one another.
So wouldn't that make Ted Cruz... You would think
Ted Cruz was Sternberg, but the problem is that the support that Cruz, I mean, Palin was a big factor in supporting Fisher. Palin has supported Cruz. Now, Club for Growth is supporting Cruz. Club for Growth supported a different candidate in that race.
Significantly supporting him. Didn't they say they put in $2 million?
What we're talking about here, though, is a race in which you have an establishment frontrunner, Bruning, in the case of Nebraska, and it is presumed Dewhurst in the case of Texas. And you have the anti-establishment forces coalesced. In Texas, they're primarily coalesced primarily around Cruz. I think it was divided in Nebraska. But the point is, can someone in a contested primary snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat and take the establishment candidate down? And I think the way that the sets up in Texas, I think we're talking about really crude.
Did they have extremely low turnout in Nebraska, like we might have in Texas?
I don't know the answer to that. I got to say, I think the Texas race is setting up that Dewhurst still finishes first, but it's looking more and more to me like a runoff race. I don't see how he gets over 50%.
Yeah,
I mean, he's still.
Well, there have been a couple polls that his folks have put out saying, see, we are too at 50%, but they're the only ones that have said that.
People just started voting this week, and yeah. I don't see anybody running away with that race. I mean, you can see some of the other races opening up, and that race doesn't seem to be opening up.
The thing that is different about the Texas race from the Nebraska race, and by the way, the Indiana race, is that in the Indiana and Nebraska races, there was a precipitating event that was problematic for the frontrunner. In Lugar's case, it was the whole fight over his residency, which then opened up the door to conversations about whether he was out of touch with Indiana.
Right.
In Bruning's case, Bruning made something like $99,000 a year as attorney general, but somehow managed to become a millionaire, I believe, while he was in office. And so there were questions about whether he was lining his own pockets while on the public dole, blah, blah, blah. In Dewhurst's case, I can't quite see what the precipitating event is.
No one's going to accuse him of becoming a millionaire while in office.
No, but Dewhurst hadn't taken this race and run away with it.
And everybody else
is still talking.
Right. Why hasn't he closed?
Yeah, he should have put this thing away a long time ago. I mean, and a couple of signs that he's not. He's still attacking Cruz. I expect that if their numbers start to show that this is going to be, that they're headed toward a runoff, that they're going to start attacking Leppert. They got to tear everybody down and get some points up. You know, he's got to get over 50, or
he's got to eat into Leppert's take, since the assumption is that of the three people who are the major challengers to Dewhurst, Leppert's voters are most like Dewhurst's voters, right, temperamentally.
And he's got to find enough voters to get him to 50%, yeah, or he's going to have to drag to July 31st. And if he does that, the narrative's against him.
Well, so what was the mind game there in the Dewhurst campaign bringing up Leppert and saying that's the memo.
I actually think I thought that that memo was an extraordinary effort to rat blank this race. I thought that rat poison.
Yeah, keep working on it.
Yes. Rhymes with you suck, Reeve. The idea here is that the Dewhurst campaign putting out a quote leaking, close right, quote, a
somebody,
memo.
Somebody said they were leaking like a soaker hose.
saying that Leppert is really our guy. They want to run against Leppert because they know that in a runoff, it's a much harder narrative for Leppert to manage than for Cruz. If Cruz ends up being in the runoff with Dewhurst, then the national media is going to look at this as Bruning Murdoch. Lugar Murdoch. They're going to see this
as... just going to look at it as the challenger's got the guy on the ropes.
The insurgent Tea Party challenger, blah-de-blah. Right. And so they want to run against... they want to sort of bolster the perception that somehow Leppert is plausibly the number two, and so that was the point of this. I mean, I think you could smell the phony baloney-ness of that memo from a mile away.
So this is something that Ross and I talked about in a kind of just an aside conversation a couple of weeks ago. But I wonder if Dewhurst ends up winning first round, you know, no runoff, what does that mean about the Tea Party in Texas? Does it mean the Tea Party doesn't have the power that people thought it did, or does it mean that the Tea Party is essentially the Republican establishment in Texas?
I don't think the Tea Party is the analysis on any of these races. Yeah. I think Lugar lost because he'd been in office for a million years and he didn't own property in the state he was trying to represent. He was just an old guy who fell out of touch with his voters. I think it was a classic case of that. The Nebraska thing looked like two people tore each other down to the point where the voters went, I'll take number three. You know, if brand A and brand B are so bad, I'll take C. And this Texas race.
That's why I don't see how it lines up. Yeah. To this race very well.
And this Texas race, I think, is its own deal, too. You know, Dewhurst is clearly, whatever you want to label him, he's the establishment candidate here. Cruz is clearly trying to run, you know, has the advantage of being running against a guy and running against everything that you think is wrong with government. He's running against the establishment. He's not running necessarily a Tea Party program. This isn't about fiscal conservatism. They've raised some points, but it's not really a Tea Party message. It's basically the people who are running this thing are running it badly. We need new blood. I'm new blood. Let's go. I don't know that that's a Tea Party deal, and yeah, I can't see that the Tea Party is the organizing force behind it.
Well that's the problem with the Tea Party is that there is no organized Tea Party message.
But you could see the crowds, and you could see the energy 2 years ago in a way that you don't see it now.
But even then, they didn't, you know... a lot of front runners still won. You know, a lot of the Tea Party candidates did not end up being the candidate.
Look, there are a handful of races on the House side, particularly, where you have Tea Party candidates challenging what are perceived to be establishment or Joe Strauss-esque Republicans.
I'm not sure I'd call them Tea Party, but you do have challengers.
Well, no, but you have a bunch of people who probably would self-identify with that wing of the party, whether they literally use the words Tea Party
or
not. Whether
it means anything or not.
Well, you know, Clardy against Hobson, Capriglione against Truitt, Eisler's got a challenger.
Right, Toth.
Keffer has a challenger, does he not? Does Jim?
Yeah, I think that's less of a challenge. But
I'm not suggesting it's going to be a successful challenge necessarily. Paul Workman's got a challenge.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think Pitts has a challenge.
But I think what all of these guys are doing is it's a little bit refined from 2010. 2010, it was the Tea Party. Let's take this back. We've been taxed enough already. Now it's kill the incumbents. It's, you know, let's go after these guys. We need to take government back. It's a refinement of the message.
Because there are a couple of cases in which people are not or are running against the Tea Party guys who are incumbents.
Right.
Like you've got Merritt running against Simpson. You've got Chris Patty running against Christian. You've got people like that.
Right. And anecdotally, what it looks like, you know, just talking to consultants and candidates around the state, it looks like voters are tending right now. This is spacey, but you know, it looks like people are tending right now to go back to the incumbents. Whether that's how it comes out, I don't know.
So of the
that's what the conversation
of the group
is now.
We've just named on the House side: Keffer, Pitts, Eisler, Hobson, Truitt, Christian.
So the
Simpson, Workman. Which of those is in trouble?
Well, I think, you know, Christian still has a tight race, but the word from his side of that race is pretty good right now. Truitt has a very tough race. Keffer's fine. Strauss is fine. Eisler should be fine, but he always runs a little nervous.
Pitts
should be fine. He's got three other candidates, though, and his problem is like Dewhurst. He's trying to stay out of a runoff.
Hobson
has a very tough race. It's geographic more than anything else. Nacogdoches hadn't been in his district before. Travis Clardy's from Nacogdoches. So that's a problem, but and there's three people in that race, so that's another one where he's trying to stay out of a runoff. But
so I guess to Ben's point about
I think Simpson beats Merritt.
Simpson beats Merritt. To Ben's point about whether we read anything from a Dewhurst victory on primary day without a runoff, does that mean that the Tea Party is dead? The Tea Party will be able to claim Peltz elsewhere on the ballot, just not that one.
I just don't know that they can claim. They can say that as they did in 2010, this group of candidates who were all espousing our Tea Party message won this race, and that's kind of a mandate for us. I don't see that all the candidates who are the anti-establishment or insurgent candidates or whatever you want to call them are espousing that message in a way that the Tea Party can say that's a mandate.
But as you pointed out to me yesterday, you said it was an old Mark White adage, but it may actually go back
to Caesar or something.
It only will make sense coming out of your mouth and your voice, so you say it rather than me.
At everything that moves, you claim everything that falls.
And so that the Tea Party guys...
That's how I've lived my life.
Yeah, right. The Tea Party guys will claim everything that falls, regardless of whether, you know, David Simpson may have beaten Tommy Merritt without the support of any of these groups that are bolstering Simpson right now, but they'll claim a victory when Simpson beats Merritt.
Well, what happens is that after any race, everybody jumps up and says, you know what the election means is blah, blah, blah. And the Tea Party won that.
Don't give away what we're doing on the podcast the week after the election.
Right. No, but
that's a preview. That's a little foreshadowing. Right.
Who, I mean, there really is no they to claim these things. I mean, all the candidates that win will I mean, most of them will embrace the Tea Party.
Well, and that's what say, yeah, a lot of them are already on the Tea Party any caucus Republican, in the legislature.
Any Republican that wins is going to say they embrace the Tea Party values, and the Tea Party is going to, whoever says they're part of the Tea Party can embrace whatever candidate they want.
Every faction spokesman will jump up on a box and say, this proves that blank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
So,
I mean, just in the Workman case, you have so Paul Workman's being attacked as, you know, an evil liberal Republican.
This is a West Travis County candidate.
But at the same time, you know, he then is able to throw up his endorsement from Rick Perry on his front page, which should, you know, help with any kind of Tea Party issue that you might want. So it's you're right. It's just it's every part of everyone can claim victory and everyone can claim defeat.
Yeah,
with right. the Tea Party support.
You know, another one, and we've talked about it a lot, is this East Texas race with Wayne Christian. Wayne Christian's clearly a conservative Republican. Rick Perry's endorsed him. Greg Abbott's endorsed him. Susan Combs has endorsed him. And yet here he is being challenged, and then a tough challenge with Chris Patti, who was the mayor of Marshall. And a lot of institutional PACs have jumped behind Patti in this thing, the realtors in particular, but a bunch of other ones. What's the Tea Party going to claim in that one? I mean, Wayne Christian was here before the Tea Party was. He's the conservative. They'll probably say, you know, we're more in line with him than the other guy. But I just think the lines are blurry.
Well, speaking of blurry, let's talk about the UT situation. Let's move on to that. That is one thing that I did follow.
Another new band name
From the Middle East. I did stay up late Skyping with people and trying to figure out what was going on with this. Basically, I mean, the whole thing has just been... I think a bit ridiculous and sort of over the top. So what happened was Paul Burka put up a post saying that Bill Powers' job was in imminent jeopardy based on...
When you knew you were going to be in the Middle East for a few days and you were thinking about Burkas, you didn't know you were going to be thinking right. about this Burka.
And it was on my birthday, too. I spent my birthday abroad trying to research Bill Powers' job security, which is not... recommended.
You are just tons of fun.
Yeah.
Right.
But
the Rick Steves guide to Middle East.
Everything about this episode has been a bit off from the get-go, I think. So he put up this blog post. It's a single anonymous source saying that this is the situation, and that set off that would set off the sort of cascade of
Social media.
Of whatever.
Well, I mean, panic. It started off a big Twitter flurry and a big Facebook flurry and a bunch of people jumping to
the
defense.
Well, and then the Facebook flurry is a whole other issue. That was also weird. So you have newspapers around the state reporting that, you know, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people have joined this Facebook group in support of Powers, and that just isn't true.
That's more votes than Buddy Romer got for president.
Yeah, I mean, but what was basically happening is that people were being added to the Facebook group by a small group of people. Since this has become more realized that the numbers of Facebook support maybe weren't there, it shouldn't detract from the fact that there was sort of an outpouring of support for Powers. You know, they still got a few hundred on another Facebook page. People did tweet #save Bill Powers to get up to the level.
And you're being on the UT campus over at KUT. I mean, everybody that I know either texted me or, you know, emailed me and said, hey, so what's the deal with Powers?
The faculty have voted to support him. The student government has supported him.
Texas X has jumped in really hard.
Yeah, right. Texas X has jumped really, really hard. So, I mean, there was some weird stuff going on with the social media and especially this Facebook group where... also, it sort of revealed the difficulty with reporting on social media since a lot of people just don't understand it. And so people inaccurately reported that thousands of people had joined this Facebook group when, in fact, thousands of people had been added without their knowledge, including Ross and Evan, by the way.
Oh, we were?
To the I Stand With Bill Powers Facebook group.
We were added?
Yeah, you guys are members of that group.
We are?
Yeah, you guys are members. Wow. Alex Cranberg, the regent, is
a
member.
I'm suing.
Yeah, who do I sue?
No one added me.
Ask
Wentworth. I felt a little left out.
I want 3% of the IPO.
But the whole thing has been, very over the top. Evan, you talked to Sigueroa.
I did. I had an opportunity to sit down with the chancellor yesterday and ask him directly, are you going to fire Bill Powers? Is Bill Powers going to get fired? And the answer is no. But, of course, the chancellor at various points in the conversation made it obvious that that could change at any moment simply because we all serve at the pleasure of, he said.
Right.
I serve at the pleasure of the regents. The president serves at the pleasure of kind of the whole totality of the system administration, regents plus system. anything that happened to the president would have to go through the chancellor's office, and he had no plans to do anything
the
with
the regents
powers.
Can't fire the president, right?
The regents can. The regents would have
to vote.
They
can vote on Cigarola's recommendation,
right? The chancellor has a role to play. Without that role, nothing can happen.
I was going to say, if the chancellor won't fire,
but this
then
could
they can't
be,
fire.
But this could be an Archibald Cox moment. I mean, I was thinking about Archibald.
Couldn't they all be?
Weirdly, I was thinking about Archibald Cox yesterday. You know,
that is weird. You're
it
right.
It is. You know, if Cigarola was directed in quotes by the regents to fire Powers and refused,
right.
They could always just fire the chancellor,
right?
And then Chancellor Rick O'Donnell would do it. I mean, you know, whoever they ended up putting it in place. I mean, you get my point. Is right. they could basically install somebody.
Right. Some Saturday night.
Who they, right. right I mean, right. truly. Right.
Well, that's why the positioning leading up to this situation has been so interesting, because Powell and the regents are actually very much tied to and invested in Cigarola's success. You know, they... all the controversy last year led to his framework.
They kumbaya'd him in August.
Yeah,
that's
and
exactly
the,
right.
the framework, you know, is Cigarola's, and that is sort of, you know, this model for moving the system forward, and they are very proud of it, and it's become, you know, it's gotten some national attention. And so for them to, so Cigarola's in this position where for them to disavow that would be very strange for the regents to do. At the same time, you know, people think that Cigarola is not going to axe Bill Powers. But I think the other interesting issue about when you're talking about supporting Bill Powers or not, the support for Bill Powers had become oddly tied to tuition increases, because that was the rumored issue.
Well, it wasn't the rumored issue. Cigarola said point blank yesterday that this whole controversy about Powers came down to one line in a blog post that Powers put up following the regents' vote not to increase the tuition for UT Austin.
Well, the whole controversy came out of several lines in Burka's blog post, I think, but the internal back and forth in the system offices.
Yes, but here in the fact based world, the issue was the one line Cigarola says, in which Powers said something to the effect of that the decision not to raise tuition was going to invariably cripple the ability of the university to blah de blah. And Cigarola's point is, when you look at the support that the system and the regents have provided to the University of Texas at Austin, and you calculate all the money that was put in over the years for various purposes, and you consider in any case that even without that money, the increase in tuition was an infinitesimal percentage, a fraction of a fraction of the overall budget in the university, that it's just wrong to say, it's overheated to say, that the decision not to raise the tuition was going to in any way cripple the ability of UT Austin to do anything. What I thought was interesting was less that than the fact that when I said to Cigarola, so you're disappointed. He said, I'm disappointed with Powers, but disappointment doesn't translate to determination. I said, did you convey the disappointment to Powers? He said, it was conveyed. I said, what does that mean, it was conveyed? Well, it was conveyed through the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, to whom Powers reports on a daily basis. And I said, so you didn't pick up the phone and call Powers and say, Powers, I'm disappointed? No. You haven't had a conversation with Powers since last week? No. Really?
Well, you could interpret that as maybe
that seems a little. Does that not seem a little strange?
Well, that allows everybody to say. I mean, you know, I'm parsing here, of course, but you know, that allows everybody to say, "No, I did not ask that one for his resignation. Right. No, I did not do this. No, he did not do that."
Well, you could also interpret it as nothing extraordinary has been going on over there that's disrupted the chain of command as much as it's been interpreted out
right,
here.
Okay, but unpack this for a second, okay? There's a blog post on Wednesday night of last week that sets the entire world aflame as far as UT goes and the status of Bill Powers and the job security of the president. You want to tell me that there's no conversation between the president and the chancellor in the last 7 days? None? Zero?
Kind of weird.
Not a phone call? Not an email?
Cigarola didn't think that was weird?
You know, to Francisco from Bill, what the F? Nothing?
Right.
Cigarola calls Powers, hey, did you read Burka? Oh my God, I like it better when he writes about fantasy baseball. Believe me, total crap, not true. And I said to Cigarola yesterday, so Burka's blog post was wrong? Absolutely, he said. I said, so Chancellor, why didn't you
just spike it
say
right there
at the time, Burka's blog post is wrong? And he said, I thought I did.
To be fair, Cigarella has a habit of putting things in a way that can be interpreted multiple ways.
Well, look,
and that's sort of his style.
The chancellor has a
political approach to communication.
The chancellor is free to characterize Burke's blog post however he wants. He's free to do whatever he wants, of course. But I think that part of the reason that this story persisted these 7 days is at least in part because it wasn't adequately spiked.
Right.
And do you see, he put out a huge long statement today talking about all the tuition stuff and whatnot. And the issue around tuition from Power's perspective is that what they did is they denied his tuition increase request and allocated sort of an equivalent to what the chancellor had recommended, but in sort of one-time funds. So that sets them up for a situation next time around where they can come in and say, well, you were fine when we didn't increase your tuition last time. Why should we increase your tuition this time? So that's Power's argument is, you know, we need some reliable sources of revenue to sustain us, not this one-time sort of expenditure from other funds.
I know this is fantasy, but wouldn't it be great if just once in the world somebody came out and said, you know, look, so we didn't raise tuition. Bill Powers had a little bit of hyperbole in his blog. That was unfortunate. It ticked off some people. They got a little hot around the collar. One of them apparently called Burka. Burka blew this up. It's all BS. It's an overreaction to a bit of hyperbole in the president's blog, and we're done here.
That's not the academic world.
Exactly.
It's not a blunt world.
I know.
But part of the problem is that people see. Part of the problem is that people see conspiracies.
Right. Oh, all the emails talking about how this is Governor Perry out to get Bill Powers.
Perry.
And the fact is, I'm not convinced. Quite honestly, I'm not convinced that people are satisfied with the chancellor's remarks to me this morning or yesterday. People say, well, he's just saying.
Yeah, but I think his remarks were not as clear as Ross just put it. At the same time, I believe that there's a strong, very vocal segment that he could come out and say, you know, this is the situation, and they would say, no, it is not. Here's the situation as we view it. And that's, the, you know, they're in this part of what this showed was that this one blog post, people are so ready to snap because tensions have gotten so high.
Right.
One little blog post, and they circle the wagons, and instantly you get, students are throwing around Harry Potter metaphors.
Well, we've gone to Harry Potter. Oh my God.
Let me disagree with you. Let me disagree with you and say this. I actually don't think this was one little blog post.
No. Well, it's a cumulative effect.
Cigarella may believe Burka was wrong. Others may question the degree to which Burka relies on, you know, named sources versus unnamed sources and then all that.
I didn't have a problem with that.
It's not, it's, yeah, exactly.
No, and I'm sure his source was.
It's not. I'm sure his, sound, I'm sure right? he, I'm sure he yeah. had a good source for this. Here's the thing. It's not one little blog post.
Right.
You know, let's acknowledge Burka's disproportionate influence on this kind of a conversation. It's not one little blog post. Burka writing that, the world was definitely turned on its axis for a while as a consequence of this, and I'm not sure it would have been if it had been somebody else.
Well, and I think, you know, I think a large part of this, you know, this circles back a little bit, but I think a large part of this rests in the reaction to it. If you don't react quickly to bad information, if this was bad information, if Burka went out on a limb and it was too far out, if the school had just called it, they wouldn't have had 3 or 4 days of speculation and let all this other stuff come out. I mean, it's almost like they intended for all this other stuff come out. I mean, if they had just come out and said, no, that's BS, he's fine, move along, we wouldn't have had no kerfluffle.
Go ahead. So when's the next time that they can meet? He's got a performance review in September
Reeve, you know this, right? In August, the regents meet behind closed doors to do performance reviews of the presidents and high system officials, and that is not an open meeting.
Right, but they can call a special meeting anytime they want.
But they'd have to post it.
Yeah.
And the next regular meeting is July, and then the performance review in August. Could they censure him in August? What can they, if they're really mad?
What has he done? You know, he's expressed disappointment.
Well, they
about
may
the
have made him mad.
There's no problem here.
Chancellor said that it's free speech.
Right. Well, and the thing is, and so Perry did comment on it yesterday. He said,
"I got a state to run."
And what he said was, he said when Obama and Cigarella and I are on the same side of an issue, which is not raising tuition, and you're on the opposite side of the issue, which was sort of clearly implying, and you, Bill Powers, are on the outside of the issue. Maybe you are on the wrong side of the issue, but.
He came out and said Bill Powers is on the wrong side of the issue. He came out and said it.
And then the education group said, and if you hadn't done tuition deregulation, we wouldn't have to raise tuition.
This is another iffy thing about this whole debate is that this is I'm not convinced that this is not a very targeted thing at UT. All the other schools that requested tuition increases got their tuition increases. UT Dallas, their tuition next fall is going up to almost 6,000, which is...
From what? Do you know?
From a little over 5,000 to almost 6,000. UT has not gotten UT over 5,000 right. yet. Yeah, UT Austin. And so for people to say like, oh, well, you know, this is all about, we're like protecting tuition. You're only protecting tuition for a fraction of the people in the state. Everyone else's tuition is going up. Some is going up much more than this school. So this, I mean...
Yeah, but the chancellor's argument is the reason that tuition does not go up at UT is because the money that UT would have gotten from a tuition increase, they got from the system...
Right,
direct.
Because the governor did not want tuition to go up at certain schools, is what it seems. I mean, he said, I will frown
so
on
you're
any tuition increases.
You are a conspiracy theorist as far as Perry's involvement in this particular story goes.
I think that the tuition freezing seems to be have a particular focus on UT Austin and Texas A&M University. And no
we
one
know how the governor feels about A&M.
And no one seems to care about right. tuition increases but, at other institutions, which belies the notion that it's all about tuition.
But the governor, let's assume that you're correct and the governor has some problem with UT. He doesn't have a problem with A&M, clearly. Why would A&M be subject to the same thing as UT?
He doesn't want tuition going up.
What he's saying is he just doesn't want the – it looks like Perry just doesn't want tuition going up at the flagships.
What happened at A&M was the faculty tuition council, they went through the process. They recommended a certain increase, and then President Lofton declined to submit a tuition request.
So the difference was that Lofton didn't ask for one, Powers did.
Yeah.
What happened at
but
the
all,
sat,
you
what
very rarely
at the,
do that.
What happened at the other A&M campuses?
Tuitions went up. I mean, it's like, you know, but they didn't go up at A&M and it didn't go up at UT this year. Everyone else this year pretty much got a tuition increase.
I have a question since we're engaging in mindless speculation, unlike every other week of the Tribcast right. since the beginning
it's a first.
Of time.
I'm just saying it's strange that people would act like this is purely about tuition when it's going up everywhere else.
I have to go back and look when Larry Faulkner resigned the presidency of UT. I seem to remember it was in the summer before a legislative session. And that he said specifically, I can't take any more of this, or something to that effect. I don't want to go into another session and do this. Powers has also served in that job for an amount of time.
Longer than average.
For an amount of time that is at least average, if not
three legislative sessions?
Well, didn't he take over in February of 2007? Am I correct about this? I thought Faulkner...
7/9/11,
I thought
three.
Faulkner announced his resignation in... the summer of 06. I have to go look that up, I thought. And that Powers began in the early part of 07. So he would have done 7, 9, and 11 as a session. So he's basically been in that job for an adequate amount of time. I wonder if his attitude, in view of everything that's happened in the last year, is enough.
But, if you know, he also might feel like, even if he's had enough, if he leaves, who are the current regents or the future regents going to put in his place? Because the hiring is pretty much up to them. You know, it's something for him to consider.
Yeah, but it's not as if there's not going to be enormous pressure on the regents from the outside, from the community of UT boosters, not right. to...
Speaking
know,
of which, you know...
He became president in 2006, according to the Google.
He was named president?
Yes.
Or he took over or he took over as president?
Became president is what it says here in 2006.
What do you think is the appropriate messaging? If you're afraid that someone is going to be fired for insubordination, do you think... portraying their bosses as Voldemort and you know the well, forces that must be fought is the best way to defend them.
Well, I mean, you know, we're on a campus here. You know, this is hyperbole land.
I'm wrong about this. Actually, Faulkner announced he would leave in the summer of 2005, so he did not announce he was leaving in the summer before a legislative session.
Announced right after a legislative session.
He announced right after.
Right.
So, in fact, then the timing of this does not line up. Right. From a Powers and
didn't
and
have. I don't think they lined Powers up for the legislative session anyway. I think they just you know when it's time to go, it's time to go.
Doesn't matter when it is related
think,
to a session.
You know, what's interesting is that you know do you come away from this going okay? So we've established whatever principle it was we were defending. Did anybody establish anything here except that they react to blog items in the middle of the night?
I would say no.
There you have it.
And thank God.
Yeah. I think it's time to...
As long as people react to blog items, we're okay.
I think it's time for us to go. It's now the summer before a legislative session. I think it's time for us to sign off. Yeah, so on behalf of Evan, Ben, Ross, and Todd, the producer...
Who has aged rapidly in the last 45 minutes.
Adios.